Luke said quietly. His eyes shifted to the blonde boy.
Did you come in here just to pick a fight, Jace Wayland?
The boy, Jace, smiled, stretching his split lip so that a thin trickle of blood ran down his chin.
Luke.
Bat, startled to hear their pack leader's first name come out of the Shadow Hunter's mouth, let go of the back of Jace's shirt.
I didn't know. There's nothing to know, said Luke,
the tiredness in his eyes creeping into his voice. Freaky Pete spoke, his voice a bass rumble.
He said the Clave wouldn't care about the death of a single lycanthrope, even a child, and it's a week after the Accords, Luke.
Jace doesn't speak for the Clave, said Luke. And there's nothing he could have done even if he'd wanted to. Isn't that right?
He looked at Jace, who was very pale. How do you...
I know what happened, said Luke. With Mayris.
Jace stiffened, and for a moment Maya saw through the Daniel-like savage amusement to what was underneath, and it was dark and agonized, and reminded her more of her own eyes in the mirror than of her brother's.
Who told you? Clary? Not Clary.
Maya had never heard Luke speak that name before, but he said it with the tone that implied that this was someone special to him, and to the Shadowhunter boy as well.
I'm the pack leader, Jace. I hear things. Now come on. Let's go to Pete's office and talk.
Jace hesitated for a moment before shrugging.
Fine, he said. But you owe me for the scotch I didn't drink.
That was my last guess, Clary said with a defeated sigh, sinking down onto the steps outside the Metropolitan Museum of Art and staring disconsolately down Fifth Avenue.
It was a good one.
Simon sat down beside her, long legs sprawled out in front of him.
I mean, he's a guy who likes weapons and killing, so why not the biggest collection of weapons in the whole city? And I'm always up for a visit to Arms and Armor anyway. Gives me ideas for my campaign.
She looked at him in surprise. You still gaming with Eric and Kirk and Matt?
Sure. Why wouldn't I be?
I thought gaming might have lost some of its appeal for you since...
Since our real life started to resemble one of your campaigns?
Complete with good guys, bad guys, really nasty magic, and important enchanted objects you had to find if you wanted to win the game. Except in a game, the good guys always won, defeated the bad guys, and came home with the treasure. Whereas in real life, they'd lost the treasure. And sometimes Clary still wasn't clear on who the bad and good guys actually were.
She looked at Simon and felt a wave of sadness. If he did give up gaming, it would be her fault. Just like everything that had happened to him in the past weeks had been her fault. She remembered his white face at the sink that morning, just before he kissed her. Simon, she began.
Right now, I'm playing a half-troll cleric who wants revenge on the orcs who killed his family. He said cheerfully, it's awesome.
She laughed just as her cell phone rang. She dug it out of her pocket and flipped it open. It was Luke. We didn't find him, she said, before he could say hello.
No, but I did.
She sat up straight. You're kidding. Is he there? Can I talk to him? She caught sight of Simon looking at her sharply and dropped her voice. Is he all right?
Mostly.
What do you mean, mostly?
He picked a fight with a werewolf pack. He's got some cuts and bruises.
Clary half-closed her eyes. Why, oh why, had Jace picked a fight with a pack of wolves? What had possessed him? Then again, it was Jace. He'd pick a fight with a Mack truck if the urge took him.
I think you should come down here, Luke said. Someone has to reason with him, and I'm not having much luck.
Where are you? Clary asked. He told her. A bar called the Hunter's Moon on Hester Street. She wondered if it was glamoured. Flipping her phone shut, she turned to Simon, who was staring at her with raised eyebrows.
The prodigal returns?
Sort of. She scrambled to her feet and stretched her tired legs, mentally calculating how long it would take them to get to Chinatown on the train, and whether it was worth shelling out the pocket money Luke had given her for a cab. Probably not, she decided. If they got stuck in traffic, it would take longer than the subway.
Come with you?
Simon finished, standing up. He was on the step below her, which made them almost the same height.
What do you think?
She opened her mouth, then closed it again quickly. He sounded resigned.
You haven't heard a word I said these past 2 minutes, have you?
No, she admitted. I was thinking about Jace. It sounded like he was in bad shape. Sorry.
His brown eyes darkened. I take it you're rushing off to bind up his wounds?
Luke asked me to come down, she said. I was hoping you'd come with me.
Simon kicked at the step above his with a booted foot. I will, but why? Can't Luke return Jace to the Institute without your help?
Probably, but he thinks Jace might be willing to talk to me about what's going on first.
I thought maybe we could do something tonight, Simon said. Something fun. See a movie, get dinner downtown.
She looked at him. In the distance, she could hear water splashing into a museum fountain. She thought of the kitchen at his house, his damp hands in her hair, but it all seemed very far away, even though she could picture it, the way you might remember the photograph of an incident without really remembering the incident itself any longer. "He's my brother," she said. "I have to go." Simon looked as if he were too weary to even sigh.
"Then I'll go with you."
The back office of Hunter's Moon was down a narrow corridor strewn with sawdust. Here and there the sawdust was churned up by footsteps and spotted with a dark liquid that didn't look like beer. The whole place smelled smoky and gamey. A little like, Clary had to admit it, though she wouldn't have said so to Luke, wet dog.
"He's not in a very good mood," said Luke, pausing in front of a closed door. "I shut him up in Freaky Pete's office after he nearly killed half my pack with his bare hands. He wouldn't talk to me, so..."
Luke shrugged. "I thought of you."
He looked from Clary's baffled face to Simon's.
"What?"
"I can't believe he came here," Clary said.
"I can't believe you know someone named Freaky Pete," said Simon.
"I know a lot of people," said Luke. "Not that Freaky Pete is strictly people, but I'm hardly one to talk."
He swung the office door wide. Inside was a plain room, windowless. The walls hung with sports pennants. There was a paper-strewn desk weighted down with a small TV set, and behind it, in a chair whose leather was so cracked it looked like veined marble, was Jace. The moment the door opened, Jace seized up a yellow pencil lying on the desk and threw it. It sailed through the air and struck the wall just next to Luke's head, where it stuck, vibrating. Luke's eyes widened. Jace smiled faintly.
"Sorry, I didn't realize it was you."
Clary felt her heart contract. She hadn't seen Jace in days, and he looked different somehow. Not just the bloody face and bruises, which were clearly new, but the skin on his face seemed tighter, the bones more prominent. Luke indicated Simon and Clary with a wave of his hand.
"I brought some people to see you."
Jace's eyes moved to them. They were as blank as if they had been painted on.
"Unfortunately," he said, "I only had the one pencil." "Jace," Luke started.
"I don't want him in here."
Jace jerked his chin toward Simon. "That's hardly fair." Clary was indignant. Had he forgotten that Simon had saved Alex's life? Possibly all their lives?
"Out, mundane," said Jace, pointing to the door.
Simon waved a hand.
"It's fine. I'll wait in the hallway."
He left, refraining from banging the door shut behind him, though Clary could tell he wanted to. She turned back to Jace.
"Do you have to be so..."
She began, but stopped when she saw his face. It looked stripped down, oddly vulnerable.
"Unpleasant," he finished for her.
"Only on days when my adoptive mother tosses me out of the house with instructions never to darken her door again. Usually I'm remarkably good-natured. Try me on any day that doesn't end in Y."
Luke frowned.
"Mayris and Robert Lightwood are not my favorite people, but I can't believe Mayris would do that."
Jace looked surprised. "You know them? The Lightwoods?"
"They were in the circle with me," said Luke. "I was surprised when I heard they were heading the Institute here. It seems they made a deal with the Clave, after the uprising, to ensure some kind of lenient treatment for themselves. While Hodge, well, we know what happened to him."
He was silent a moment.
"Did Mayris say why she was exiling you, so to speak?"
"She doesn't believe that I thought I was Michael Whalen's son." She accused me of being in it with Valentine all along, saying I helped him get away with the mortal cup.
Then why would you still be here? Clary asked. Why wouldn't you have fled with him?
She wouldn't say, but I suspect she thinks I stayed to be a spy, a viper in their bosoms. Not that she used the word bosoms, but the thought was there. A spy for Valentine?
Luke sounded dismayed.
She thinks Valentine assumed that because of their affection for me, she and Robert would believe whatever I said. So Maris has decided that the solution to that is not to have any affection for me.
Affection doesn't work like that.
Luke shook his head.
You can't turn it off like a tap. Especially if you're a parent.
They're not really my parents.
There's more to parentage than blood. They've been your parents for 7 years in all the ways that matter. Maris is just hurt.
Hurt? Jace sounded incredulous. She's hurt?
She loved Valentine, remember, said Luke. As we all did. He hurt her badly. She doesn't want his son to do the same. She worries you've lied to them, that the person she thought you were all these years was a ruse, a trick. You have to reassure her.
Jace's expression was a perfect mixture of stubbornness and astonishment.
Maris is an adult. She shouldn't need reassurance from me.
Oh, come on, Jace, Clary said. You can't wait for perfect behavior from everyone. Adults screw up, too. Go back to the Institute and talk to her rationally. Be a man.
I don't want to be a man, said Jace. I want to be an angst-ridden teenager who can't confront his own inner demons and takes it out verbally on other people instead.
Well, said Luke, you're doing a fantastic job.
Jace, Clary said hastily, before they could start fighting in earnest, you have to go back to the Institute. Think about Alec and Izzy. Think what this will do to them.
Maris will make something up to calm them down. Maybe she'll say I ran off.
That won't work, said Clary. Isabel sounded frantic on the phone.
Isabel always sounds frantic, said Jace.
But he looked pleased. He leaned back in the chair. The bruises along his jaw and cheekbones stood out like dark, shapeless marks against his skin.
I won't go back to a place where I'm not trusted. I'm not 10 years old anymore. I can take care of myself.
Luke looked as if he weren't sure about that.
Where will you go? How will you live?
Jace's eyes glittered. I'm 17, practically an adult. Any adult shadow hunter is entitled to.
Any adult, but you're not one. You can't draw a salary from the clave because you're too young, and in fact, the Lightwoods are bound by the law to care for you. If they won't, someone else will be appointed, or...
Or what? Jace sprang up from the chair.
I'll go to an orphanage in Idris? Be dumped on some family I've never met? I can get a job in the mundane world for a year, live like one of them.
No, you can't, Clary said. I ought to know, Jace. I was one of them. You're too young for any job you'd want, and besides, the skills you have? Well, most professional killers are older than you, and they're criminals.
I'm not a killer. If you lived in the mundane world, said Luke, that's all you'd be.
Jace stiffened, his mouth tightening, and Clary knew Luke's words had hit him where it hurt.
You don't get it, he said, a sudden desperation in his voice. I can't go back.
Maris wants me to say I hate Valentine. And I can't do that. Jace raised his chin, his jaw set, his eyes on Luke as if he half expected the older man to respond with derision or even horror. After all, Luke had more reason to hate Valentine than almost anyone else in the world.
I know, said Luke. I loved him once, too.
Jace exhaled, almost a sound of relief, and Clary thought suddenly, this is why he came here, to this place. Not just to start a fight, but to get to Luke, because Luke would understand. Not everything Jace did was insane and suicidal, she reminded herself. It just seemed that way.
You shouldn't have to claim you hate your father, said Luke. Not even to reassure Maris. She ought to understand.
Clary looked at Jace closely, trying to read his face. It was like a book written in a foreign language she'd studied all too briefly. Did she really say she never wanted you to come back? Clary asked. Or did you just assume that was what she meant, so you left?
She told me it would probably be better if I found somewhere else to be for a while, Jace said. She didn't say where. Did you give her a chance to?
Luke said.
Look, Jace, you're absolutely welcome to stay with me as long as you need to. I want you to know that.
Clary's stomach flipped. The thought of Jace in the same house she lived in, always nearby, filled her with a mixture of exultation and horror.
Thanks, said Jace.
His voice was even, but his eyes had gone instantly, helplessly, to Clary, and she could see in them the same awful mixture of emotions she felt herself.
Luke, she thought, sometimes I wish you weren't quite so generous, or so blind.
But, Luke went on, I think you should at least go back to the Institute long enough to talk to Maris and find out what's really going on. It sounds like there's more to this than she's telling you. More, maybe, than you were willing to hear.
Jace tore his gaze from Clary's.
All right. His voice was rough, but on one condition. I don't want to go by myself.
I'll go with you, Clary said quickly.
I know.
Jace's voice was low.
And I want you to. But I want Luke to come too.
Luke looked startled.
Jace, I've lived here 15 years and I've never gone to the Institute. Not once. I doubt Maris is any fonder of me.
Please, Jace said, and though his voice was flat and he spoke quietly, Clary could almost feel like a palpable thing the pride he'd had to fight down to say that single word.
All right.
Luke nodded, the nod of a pack leader used to doing what he had to do, whether he wanted to or not.
Then I'll come with you.
Simon leaned against the wall in the corridor outside Pete's office and tried not to feel sorry for himself. The day had started off well, fairly well anyway. First there'd been that bad episode with the Dracula film on television making him feel sick and faint, bringing up all the emotions, the longings he'd been trying to push down and forget about. Then somehow the sickness had knocked the edge off his nerves, and he'd found himself kissing Clary the way he'd wanted to for so many years. People always said that things never turned out the way you imagined they would. People were wrong. And she'd kissed him back. But now she was in there with Jace, and Simon had a knotting, twisting feeling in his stomach, like he'd swallowed a bowl full of worms. It was a sick feeling he'd grown used to lately. It hadn't always been like this. Even after he'd realized how he felt about Clary, he'd never pressed her, never pushed his feelings on her. He'd always been sure that one day she would wake up out of her dreams of animated princes and kung fu heroes and realize what was staring them both in the face. They belonged together. And if she hadn't seemed interested in Simon, at least she hadn't seemed interested in anyone else either. Until Jace. He remembered sitting on the porch steps of Luke's house, watching Clary as she explained to him who Jace was, what he did, while Jace examined his nails and looked superior. Simon had barely heard her. He'd been too busy noticing how she looked at the blonde boy with the strange tattoos and the angular, pretty face.
Too pretty, Simon had thought.
But Clary clearly hadn't thought so. She'd looked at him as though he were one of her animated heroes come to life. He had never seen her look at anyone that way before, and had always thought that if she ever did, it would be him. But it wasn't. And that hurt more than he'd ever imagined anything could hurt. Finding out that Jace was Clary's brother was like being marched up in front of a firing squad and then being handed a reprieve at the last minute. Suddenly, the world seemed full of possibilities again. Now he wasn't so sure.
Hey there!
Someone was coming along the corridor, a not very tall someone picking their way gingerly among the blood spatters. Are you waiting to see Luke? Is he in there?
Not exactly.
Simon moved away from the door.
I mean, sort of. He's in there with a friend of mine.
The person who had just reached him stopped and stared. Simon could see that she was a girl, about 16 years old, with smooth, light brown skin. Her brown gold hair was braided close to her head in dozens of small braids, and her face was nearly the exact shape of a heart. She had a compact, curvy body, wide hips flaring out from a smaller waist.
That guy from the bar? The Shadow Hunter?
Simon shrugged.
Well, I hate to tell you this, she said, but your friend is an asshole.
He's not my friend, said Simon, and I couldn't agree with you more, actually.
But I thought you said...
I'm waiting for his sister, said Simon. She's my best friend.
And she's in there with him right now? The girl jerked her thumb toward the door. She wore rings on each of her fingers, primitive-looking bands hammered out of bronze and gold. Her jeans were worn but clean, and when she turned her head, he saw the scar that ran along her neck, just above the collar of her T-shirt.
"Well," she said grudgingly, "I know about asshole brothers. I guess it's not her fault."
"It's not," said Simon. "But she's maybe the only person he might listen to."
"He didn't strike me as the listening type," said the girl,
and caught his sidelong look with a look of her own. Amusement flickered across her face.
"You're looking at my scar. It's where I was bitten."
"Bitten? You mean you're a..."
"A werewolf," said the girl. "Like everyone else here, except you, and the asshole, and the asshole's sister."
"But you weren't always a werewolf. I mean, you weren't born one."
"Most of us aren't," said the girl. "That's what makes us different than your shadow hunter buddies."
"What?"
She smiled fleetingly. "We were human once."
Simon said nothing to that. After a moment, the girl held her hand out.
"I'm Maya."
"Simon." He shook her hand. It was dry and soft. She looked up at him through golden brown eyelashes, the color of buttered toast.
"How do you know Jace is an asshole?" he said. "Or maybe I should say, how did you find out?"
She took her hand back. "He tore up the bar, punched out my friend Bat, even knocked a couple of the pack unconscious."
"Are they all right?"
Simon was alarmed. Jace hadn't seemed perturbed, but knowing him, Simon had no doubt he could kill several people in a single morning and go out for waffles afterward.
"Did they get to a doctor?"
"A warlock," said the girl.
"We don't have much to do with mundane doctors, our kind."
"Downworlders?" Her eyebrows went up.
"Someone taught you all the lingo, didn't they?"
Simon was nettled.
"How do you know I'm not one of them? Or you, a shadow hunter, or a downworlder, or..."
She shook her head until her braids bounced.
"It just shines out of you," she said a little bitterly. "Your humanity."
The intensity in her voice almost made him shiver.
"I could knock on the door," he suggested, feeling suddenly lame. "If you want to talk to Luke."
She shrugged.
"Just tell him Magnus is here, checking out the scene in the alley."
He must have looked startled because she said, "Magnus Bane. He's a warlock."
"I know," Simon wanted to say, but didn't. The whole conversation had been weird enough already.
"Okay." Maya turned as if to go, but paused partway down the hall, one hand on the door jamb.
"You think she'll be able to talk sense into him?" she asked. "His sister?"
"If he listens to anyone, it would be her."
"That's sweet," said Maya, "that he loves his sister like that."
"Yeah," Simon said. "It's precious."
Chapter 3. The Inquisitor. The first time Clary had ever seen the Institute, it had looked like a dilapidated church, its roof broken in, stained yellow police tape holding the door closed. Now she didn't have to concentrate to dispel the illusion. Even from across the street, she could see it exactly as it was. A towering, Gothic cathedral whose spires seemed to pierce the dark blue sky like knives. Luke fell silent. It was clear from the look on his face that some kind of struggle was taking place inside him. As they mounted the steps, Jace reached inside his shirt as if from habit. But when he drew his hand out, it was empty. He laughed without any mirth.
"I forgot. Maris took my keys from me before I left."
"Of course she did."
Luke was standing directly in front of the Institute's doors. He gently touched the symbols carved into the wood, just below the architrave.
"These doors are just like the ones at the Council Hall in Idris. I never thought I would see their like again."
Clary almost felt guilty interrupting Luke's reverie, but there were practical matters to attend to.
"If we don't have a key..."
"One shouldn't be necessary. An institute should be open to any of the Nephilim who mean no harm to the inhabitants."
"What if they mean harm to us?" Jace muttered.
Luke's mouth quirked at the corner.
"I don't think that makes a difference."
"Yeah, the Clave always stacks the deck its way."
Jace's voice sounded muffled. His lower lip was swelling, his left eyelid turning purple.
"Why didn't he heal himself?" Clary wondered.
"Did she take your stele, too?"
I didn't take anything when I left, Jay said. I didn't want to take anything the Lightwoods got for me.
Luke looked at him with some concern.
Every shadow hunter must have a stele.
So I'll get another one, said Jace, and put his hand to the Institute's door.
In the name of the Clave, he said, I ask entry to this holy place, and in the name of the angel Raziel, I ask your blessings upon my mission against...
The doors swung open. Clary could see the cathedral's interior through them, the shadowy darkness illuminated here and there by candles and tall iron candelabras.
Well, that's convenient, said Jace. I guess blessings are easier to come by than I thought. Maybe I should ask for blessings on my mission against all those who wear white after Labor Day.
The angel knows what your mission is, said Luke. You don't have to say the words aloud, Jonathan.
For a moment, Clary thought she saw something flickering across Jace's face. Uncertainty, surprise, and maybe even relief. But all he said was,
Don't call me that. It's not my name.
They made their way through the ground floor of the cathedral, past the empty pews and the light burning forever on the altar. Luke looked around him curiously, and even seemed surprised when the elevator, like a gilded birdcage, arrived to carry them up.
This must have been Mayris's idea, he said as they stepped into it. It's entirely her taste.
It's been here as long as I have, said Jace, as the door clanged shut behind them.
The ride up was brief, and none of them spoke. Clary played nervously with the fringe of her scarf. She felt a little guilty about having told Simon to go home and wait for her to call him later. She had seen from the annoyed set of his shoulders as he stalked off down Canal Street that he'd felt summarily dismissed. Still, she couldn't imagine having him, a mundane, here while Luke petitioned Mayris Lightwood on Jace's behalf. It would just make everything awkward.
The elevator came to a clanging stop, and they stepped out to find Church waiting for them in the entryway, a slightly dilapidated red bow around his neck. Jace bent to rub the back of his hand along the cat's head.
Where's Mayris?
Church made a noise in his throat, halfway between a purr and a growl, and headed off down the corridor. They followed, Jace silent, Luke glancing around with evident curiosity.
I never thought I'd see the inside of this place.
Clary asked, Does it look like you thought it would?
I've been to the institutes in London and Paris. This is not unlike those, no, though somehow...
Somehow what?
Jace was several strides ahead.
Colder, said Luke.
Jace said nothing. They had reached the library. Church sat down as if to indicate that he planned to go no farther. Voices were faintly audible through the thick wooden door, but Jace pushed it open without knocking and strode inside. Clary heard a voice exclaim in surprise. For a moment her heart contracted as she thought of Hodge, who had all but lived in this room. Hodge, with his gravelly voice, and Hugo, the raven who was his almost constant companion, and who had, at Hodge's orders, nearly ripped out her eyes. It wasn't Hodge, of course. Behind the enormous mahogany plank desk that balanced on the backs of two kneeling stone angels sat a middle-aged woman with Isabel's ink-black hair and Alec's thin, wiry build. She wore a neat black suit, very plain, in contrast to the multiple brightly colored rings that burned on her fingers. Beside her stood another figure, a slender teenage boy, slightly built, with curling dark hair and honey-colored skin. As he turned to look at them, Clary couldn't hold back an exclamation of surprise.
Raphael?
For a moment the boy looked taken aback. Then he smiled, his teeth very white and sharp, not surprising considering that he was a vampire.
Dios,
he said, addressing himself to Jace.
What happened to you, brother? You look as if a pack of wolves tried to tear you apart. That's either a shockingly good guess, said Jace, or you heard about what happened.
Raphael's smile turned into a grin.
I hear things.
The woman behind the desk rose to her feet. Jace, she said, her voice full of anxiety.
Did something happen? Why are you back so soon? I thought you were going to stay with...
Her gaze moved past him to Luke and Clary.
And who are you?
Jace's sister, Clary said. Mayris's eyes rested on Clary.
Yes, I can see it. You look like Valentine.
She turned back to Jace.
You brought your sister with you. And a mundane as well. It's not safe for any of you here right now, and especially a mundane.
Luke, smiling faintly, said,
But I'm not a mundane.
Mayris's expression changed slowly from bewilderment to shock as she looked at Luke, really looked at him for the first time.
Lucian? Hello, Mayris, said Luke. It's been a long time.
Mayris's face was very still, and in that moment she looked suddenly much older, older even than Luke. She sat down carefully.
Lucian, she said again, her hands flat on the desk. Lucian Greymark.
Raphael, who had been watching the proceedings with the bright, curious gaze of a bird, turned to Luke.
You killed Gabriel.
Who is Gabriel?
Clary stared at Luke, puzzled. He gave a slight shrug.
I did, yes. Just like he killed the pack leader before him. That's how it works with lycanthropes.
Mayris looked up at that.
The pack leader?
If you lead the pack now, it's time for us to talk, said Raphael,
inclining his head graciously in Luke's direction, though his eyes were wary.
Though not at this exact moment, perhaps.
I'll send someone over to arrange it, said Luke. Things have been busy lately. I might be behind on the niceties.
You might, was all that Raphael said.
He turned back to Mayris.
Is our business here concluded?
Mayris spoke with an effort.
If you say the Night Children aren't involved in these killings, then I'll take you at your word. I'm required to, unless other evidence comes to light.
Raphael frowned.
To light, he said. That is not a phrase I like.
He turned then, and Clary saw with a start that she could see through the edges of him, as if he were a photograph that had blurred around the margins. His left hand was transparent, and through it, she could see the big metal globe Hodge had always kept on the desk. She heard herself make a little noise of surprise as the transparency spread up his arms from his hands, and down his chest from his shoulders, and in a moment he was gone, like a figure erased from a sketch. Mayris exhaled a sigh of relief. Clary gaped.
Is he dead? What, Raphael? Said Jace. Not likely. That was just a projection of him. He can't come into the Institute in his corporeal body.
Why not?
Because this is hallowed ground, said Mayris, and he is damned.
Her wintry eyes lost none of their coldness when she turned her glance on Luke.
You, head of the pack here? She asked. I suppose I should hardly be surprised. It does seem to be your method, doesn't it?
Luke ignored the bitterness in her tone.
Was Raphael here about the cub who was killed today?
That and a dead warlock, Mayris said, found murdered downtown 2 days apart.
But why was Raphael here?
The warlock was drained of blood, said Mayris. It seems that whoever murdered the werewolf was interrupted before the blood could be taken. But suspicion naturally fell on the Night Children. The vampire came here to assure me his folk had nothing to do with it.
Do you believe him? Jace said.
I don't care to talk about Clave business with you right now, Jace. Especially not in front of Lucian Greymark.
I'm just called Luke now, Luke said placidly. Luke Garraway.
Mayris shook her head. I hardly recognize you. You look like a mundane.
That's the idea, yes.
We all thought you were dead.
Hoped, said Luke, still placidly. Hoped I was dead.
Mayris looked as if she'd swallowed something sharp. You might as well sit down, she said finally, pointing toward the chairs in front of the desk. Now, said Mayris, once they'd taken their seats, perhaps you might tell me why you're here.
Jace, said Luke without preamble, wants a trial before the Clave. I'm willing to vouch for him. I was there that night at Renwick's when Valentine revealed himself. I fought him, and we nearly killed each other. I can confirm that everything Jace says happened is the truth.
I'm not so sure, countered Mayris, what your word is worth.
I may be a lycanthrope, said Luke, but I'm also a shadow hunter. I'm willing to be tried by the sword, if that will help.
By the sword? That sounded bad. Clary looked over at Jace. He was outwardly calm, his fingers laced together in his lap, but there was a shuddering tension about him, as if he were a hair's breadth from exploding. He caught her look and said,
The soul sword, the second of the mortal instruments.
It's used in trials to determine if a shadow hunter is lying.
You're not a shadow hunter, said Mayris to Luke, as if Jace hadn't spoken. You haven't lived by the law of the Clave in a long, long time.
There was a time when you didn't live by it either, said Luke.
High color flooded Mayris's cheeks.
I would have thought, he went on, that by now you would have gotten past not being able to trust anyone, Mayris.
Some things you never forget, she said. Her voice held a dangerous softness. You think pretending his own death was the biggest lie Valentine ever told us? You think charm is the same as honesty?
I used to think so.
I was wrong. She stood up and leaned on the table with her thin hands. He told us he would lay down his life for the circle, and that he expected us to do the same. And we would have, all of us, I know it. I nearly did it. Her gaze swept over Jason Clary, and her eyes locked with Luke's. You remember, she said, the way he told us that the uprising would be nothing, hardly a battle, a few unarmed ambassadors against the full might of the circle. I was so confident in our swift victory that when I rode out to Alicante, I left Alec at home in his cradle. I asked Jocelyn to watch my children while I was away. She refused. I know why now. She knew. And so did you. And you didn't warn us.
I tried to warn you about Valentine, said Luke. You didn't listen.
I don't mean about Valentine. I mean about the uprising. When we arrived, there were 50 of us against 500 downworlders.
You'd been willing to slaughter them unarmed when you thought there would be only 5 of them, said Luke quietly.
Mayris's hands clenched on the desk. We were slaughtered, she said. In the midst of the carnage, we looked to Valentine to lead us, but he wasn't there. By that time, the Clave had surrounded the Hall of Accords. We thought Valentine had been killed. We're ready to give our own lives in a final desperate rush. Then I remembered Alec. If I died, what would happen to my little boy? Her voice caught. So I laid my arms down and gave myself up to the Clave.
You did the right thing, Mayris, said Luke.
She turned on him, eyes blazing. Don't patronize me, werewolf. If it weren't for you. Don't yell at him, Clary cut in, almost rising to her feet herself. It's your fault for believing Valentine in the first place. You think I don't know that? There was a ragged edge to Mayris's voice now. Oh, the Clave made that point nicely when they questioned us. They had the soul sword and they knew when we were lying, but they couldn't make us talk. Nothing could make us talk until...
Until what?
It was Luke who spoke.
I've never known. I always wondered what they told you to make you turn on him.
Just the truth, Mayris said, sounding suddenly tired. That Valentine hadn't died there in the hall. He'd fled, left us there to die without him. He'd died later, we were told, burned to death in his house. The Inquisitor showed us his bones, the charred amulet he used to wear. Of course, that was another lie. Her voice trailed off, and then she rallied again, her words crisp. It was all coming apart by then anyway. We were finally talking to one another, those of us in the circle. Before the battle, Valentine had drawn me aside, told me that out of all the circle, I was the one he trusted most, his closest lieutenant. When the Clave questioned us, I found out he'd said the same thing to everyone.
Hell hath no fury, Jace muttered,
so quietly that only Clary could hear him. He lied not just to the Clave but to us. He used our loyalty and our affection, just as he did when he sent you to us, Mayris said, looking directly at Jace now. And now he's back, and he has the mortal cup. He's been planning all this for years, all along, all of it. I can't afford to trust you, Jace. I'm sorry. Jace said nothing. His face was expressionless, but he'd gone paler as Mayra spoke, his new bruises standing out livid on his jaw and cheek.
Then what? Luke said. What is it you expect him to do? Where is he supposed to go?
Her eyes rested for a moment on Clary. Why not to his sister? She said. Family. Isabel is Jace's sister, interrupted Clary. Alec and Max are his brothers. What are you going to tell them? They'll hate you forever if you throw Jace out of your house. Mayris's eyes rested on her.
What do you know about it?
I know Alec and Isabel, said Clary. The thought of Valentine came unwelcome. She pushed it away. Family is more than blood. Valentine isn't my father. Luke is. Just like Alec and Max and Isabel are Jace's family. If you try to tear him out of your family, you'll leave a wound that won't ever heal. Luke was looking at her with a sort of surprised respect. Something flickered in Maris's eyes. Uncertainty?
Clary, Jace said softly. Enough.
He sounded defeated. Clary turned on Maris.
What about the sword? She demanded.
Maris looked at her for a moment with genuine puzzlement.
The sword?
The soul sword, said Clary. The one you can use to tell if a shadow hunter is lying or not. You can use it on Jace.
That's a good idea.
There was a spark of animation in Jace's voice.
Clary, you mean well, but you don't know what the sword entails, Luke said. The only one who can use it is the Inquisitor.
Jace sat forward.
Then call on her. Call the Inquisitor. I want to end this. No, Luke said.
But Maris was looking at Jace.
The Inquisitor, she said reluctantly, is already on her way. Maris, Luke's voice cracked. Tell me you haven't called her into this.
I didn't. Did you think the Clave wouldn't involve itself in this wild tale of forsaken warriors and portals and staged deaths? After what Hodge did? We're all under investigation now, thanks to Valentine,
she finished, seeing Jace's white and stunned expression. The Inquisitor could put Jace in prison. She could strip his marks. I thought it would be better.
If Jace were gone when she arrived, said Luke. No wonder you've been so eager to send him away.
Who is the Inquisitor? Clary demanded.
The word conjured up images of the Spanish Inquisition, of torture, the whip and the rack.
What does she do?
She investigates shadow hunters for the Clave, said Luke. She ensures the law hasn't been broken by Nephilim. She investigated all the Circle members after the uprising.
She cursed Hodge, Jay said. She sent you here?
She chose our exile and his punishment. She has no love for us and hates your father.
I'm not leaving, said Jace, still very pale.
What will she do to you if she gets here and I'm gone? She'll think you conspired to hide me. She'll punish you. You and Alec and Isabel and Max.
Maris said nothing.
Maris, don't be a fool, Luke said. She'll blame you more if you let Jace go. Keeping him here and allowing the trial by sword would be a sign of good faith.
Keeping Jace? You can't be serious, Luke,
Clary said. She knew using the sword had been her idea, but she was beginning to regret ever having brought it up.
She sounds awful.
But if Jace leaves, said Luke, he can never come back. He'll never be a shadow hunter again. Like it or not, the Inquisitor is the law's right hand. If Jace wants to stay a part of the Clave, he has to cooperate with her. He does have something on his side. Something the members of the Circle did not have after the uprising.
And what's that? Maris asked. Luke smiled faintly.
Unlike you, he said, Jace is telling the truth.
Maris took a hard breath, then turned to Jace. Ultimately, it's your decision, she said.
If you want the trial, you can stay here until the Inquisitor comes.
I'll stay, Jace said. There was a firmness in his tone, devoid of anger, that surprised Clary. He seemed to be looking past Maris, a light flickering in his eyes, as if of reflected fire. In that moment, Clary couldn't help but think that he looked very like his father.
Chapter 4. The Cuckoo in the Nest.
Orange juice, molasses, eggs. Weeks past their sell-by date, though. And something that looks kinda like lettuce.
Lettuce? Clary peered over Simon's shoulder into the fridge.
Oh, that's some mozzarella.
Simon shuddered and kicked Luke's fridge door shut.
Order pizza?
I already did,
said Luke, coming into the kitchen with the cordless phone in hand.
One large veggie pie, 3 Cokes. And I called the hospital,
he added, hanging the phone up.
There's been no change with Jocelyn.
Oh, Clary said. She sat down at the wooden table in Luke's kitchen. Usually Luke was pretty neat, but at the moment the table was covered in unopened mail and stacks of dirty plates. Luke's green duffel hung across the back of a chair. She knew she should be helping with the cleaning up, but lately she just hadn't had the energy. Luke's kitchen was small and a little dingy at the best of times. He wasn't much of a cook, as evidenced by the fact that the spice rack that hung over the old-fashioned gas stove was empty of spices. Instead, he used it to hold boxes of coffee and tea. Simon sat down next to her as Luke cleared the dirty dishes off the table and dumped them into the sink. "Are you okay?" he asked in a low voice.
"I'm all right."
Clary managed a smile.
"I didn't expect my mom to wake up today, Simon. I have this feeling she's waiting for something."
"Do you know what?"
"No, just that something's missing."
She looked up at Luke, but he was involved in vigorously scrubbing the plates clean in the sink.
"Or someone."
Simon looked quizzically at her, then shrugged.
"So it sounds like the scene at the Institute was pretty intense."
Clary shuddered.
"Alec and Isabel's mom is scary."
"What's her name again?"
"Maris," said Clary, copying Luke's pronunciation.
"It's an old shadow hunter name."
Luke dried his hands on a dishcloth.
"And Jace decided to stay there and deal with this Inquisitor person? He didn't want to leave?" Simon said. "It's what he has to do if he ever wants to have a life as a shadow hunter," said Luke. "And being that, one of the Nephilim, means everything to him. I knew other shadow hunters like him back in Idris. If you took that away from him..."
The familiar buzz of the doorbell sounded. Luke tossed the dishcloth onto the counter.
"I'll be right back."
As soon as he was out of the kitchen, Simon said,
"It's really weird thinking of Luke as someone who was once a shadow hunter. Weirder than it is thinking of him as a werewolf."
"Really? Why?"
Simon shrugged.
"I've heard of werewolves before. They're sort of a known element. So he turns into a wolf once a month. So what? But the shadow hunter thing? They're like a cult."
"They're not like a cult."
"Sure they are. Shadow hunting is their whole lives. And they look down on everyone else. They call us mundanes. Like they're not human beings. They're not friends with ordinary people. They don't go to the same places. They don't know the same jokes. They think they're above us."
Simon pulled one gangly leg up and twisted the frayed edge of the hole in the knee of his jeans.
"I met another werewolf today."
"Don't tell me you were hanging out with Freaky Pete at the Hunter's Moon." There was an uneasy feeling in the pit of her stomach, but she couldn't have said exactly what was causing it. Probably free-floating stress.
"No, it was a girl," Simon said. "About our age. Named Maya."
"Maya?"
Luke was back in the kitchen carrying a square white pizza box. He dropped it onto the table and Clary reached over to pop it open. The smell of hot dough, tomato sauce, and cheese reminded her how starved she was. She tore off a slice, not waiting for Luke to slide a plate across the table to her. He sat down with a grin, shaking his head.
"Maya's one of the pack, right?" Simon asked, taking a slice himself.
Luke nodded.
"Sure. She's a good kid. I've had her over here a few times, looking out for the bookstore while I've been at the hospital. She lets me pay her in books."
Simon looked at Luke over his pizza.
"Are you low on money?"
Luke shrugged.
"Money's never been important to me, and the pack looks after its own."
Clary said,
"My mom always said that when we ran low on money, she'd sell one of my dad's stocks. But since the guy I thought was my dad wasn't my dad, and I doubt Valentine has any stocks..."
"Your mother was selling her jewelry off bit by bit," said Luke. "Valentine had given her some of his family's pieces, jewelry that had been with the Morgensterns for generations. Even a small piece would fetch a high price at auction."
He sighed.
"Those are gone now, though Valentine may have recovered them from the wreckage of your old apartment."
"Well, I hope it gave her some satisfaction anyway," Simon said, "selling off his stuff like that."
He took a third piece of pizza. It was truly amazing, Clary thought, how much teenage boys were able to eat without ever gaining weight or making themselves sick. "It must have been weird for you," she said to Luke, "seeing Maris Lightwood like that after such a long time."
"Not precisely weird. Maris isn't that different now from how she was then. In fact, she's more like herself than ever, if that makes sense."
Clary thought it did. The way that Maris Lightwood had looked recollected to her the slim, dark girl in the photo Hodge had given her, the one with the haughty tilt to her chin. "How do you think she feels about you?" she asked. "Do you really think they hoped you were dead?"
Luke smiled. "Maybe not out of hatred, no. But it would have been more convenient and less messy for them if I had died, certainly. That I'm not just alive, but am leading the downtown pack can't be something they hoped for. It's their job, after all, to keep the peace between downworlders, and here I come, with a history with them and plenty of reason to want revenge. They'll be worried I'm a wild card."
"Are you?" asked Simon. They were out of pizza, so he reached over without looking and took one of Clary's nibbled crusts. He knew she hated crust.
"A wild card, I mean." "There's nothing wild about me. I'm stolid. Middle-aged."
"Except that once a month you turn into a wolf and go tearing around slaughtering things," Clary said.
"It could be worse," Luke said. "Men my age have been known to purchase expensive sports cars and sleep with supermodels."
"You're only 38, Simon pointed out. "That's not middle-aged."
"Thank you, Simon. I appreciate that."
Luke opened the pizza box and, finding it empty, shut it with a sigh.
"Though you did eat all the pizza."
"I only had 5 slices, Simon protested, leaning his chair backward so it balanced precariously on its 2 back legs. "How many slices did you think were in a pizza, dork?" Clary wanted to know.
"Less than 5 slices isn't a meal. It's a snack."
Simon looked apprehensively at Luke.
"Does this mean you're going to wolf out and eat me?" "Certainly not."
Luke rose to toss the pizza box into the trash.
"You would be stringy and hard to digest."
"But kosher," Simon pointed out cheerfully.
"I'll be sure to point any Jewish lycanthropes your way."
Luke leaned his back against the sink.
"But to answer your earlier question, Clary, it was strange seeing Maris Lightwood, but not because of her. It was the surroundings. The Institute reminded me too much of the Hall of Accords in Idris. I could feel the strength of the Grey Book's runes all around me, after 15 years of trying to forget them."
"Did you," Clary asked, "manage to forget them?"
"There are some things you never forget. The runes of the book are more than illustrations. They become part of you, part of your skin. Being a shadow hunter never leaves you. It's a gift that's carried in your blood, and you can no more change it than you can change your blood type."
"I was wondering," Clary said, "if maybe I should get some marks myself." Simon dropped the pizza crust he'd been gnawing on.
"You're kidding."
"No, I'm not. Why would I joke about something like that? And why shouldn't I get marks? I'm a shadow hunter. I might as well go for what protection I can get."
"Protection from what?"
Simon demanded, leaning forward so that the front legs of his chair hit the floor with a bang. "I thought all this shadow hunting stuff was over. I thought you were trying to live a normal life." Luke's tone was mild.
"I'm not sure there's such a thing as a normal life."
Clary looked down at her arm, where Jace had drawn the only mark she'd ever received. She could still see the lace-like white tracery it had left behind, more a memory than a scar. "Sure, I want to get away from the weirdness. But what if the weirdness comes after me? What if I don't have a choice?"
"Or maybe you don't want to get away from the weirdness that badly," Simon muttered. "Not as long as Jace is still involved with it anyway."
Luke cleared his throat.
"Most Nephilim go through levels of training before they receive their marks. I wouldn't recommend getting any until you've completed some instruction. And whether you even want to do that is up to you, of course. However, there is something you should have. Something every shadow hunter should have."
"An obnoxious, arrogant attitude?" Simon said.
"A stele," said Luke. "Every shadow hunter should have a stele."
"Do you have one?" Clary asked, surprised. Without responding, Luke headed out of the kitchen. He was back in a few moments, holding an object wrapped in black fabric. Setting the object down on the table, he unrolled the cloth, revealing a gleaming wand-like instrument made of a pale, opaque crystal. A stele.
"Pretty," said Clary.
"I'm glad you think so," said Luke, "because I want you to have it."
"Have it?" She looked at him in astonishment. "But it's yours, isn't it?" He shook his head.
"This was your mother's.
She didn't want to keep it at the apartment in case you happened to cross it, so she asked me to hold on to it for her.
Clary picked the stele up. It felt cool to the touch, though she knew it would heat to a glow when used. It was a strange object, not quite long enough to be a weapon, not quite short enough to be an easily manipulated drawing tool. She supposed the odd size was just something you got used to over time.
I can have it?
Sure. It's an old model, of course, almost 20 years out of date. They may have refined the design since. Still, it's reliable enough.
Simon watched her as she held the stele, like a conductor's baton, tracing invisible patterns lightly on the air between them.
This kind of reminds me of the time my grandfather gave me his old golf clubs.
Clary laughed and lowered her hand. Yeah, except you never used those.
And I hope you never have to use that, Simon said, and looked quickly away before she could reply.
Smoke rose from the marks in black spirals, and he smelled the choking scent of his own skin burning. His father stood over him with the stele, its tip gleaming red like the tip of a poker left too long in the fire.
"Close your eyes, Jonathan," he said. "Pain is only what you allow it to be."
But Jace's hand curled in on itself, unwillingly, as if his skin were writhing, twisting to get away from the stele. He heard the snap as one bone in his hand broke, and then another. Jace opened his eyes and blinked up at the darkness, his father's voice fading away like smoke in rising wind. He tasted pain, metallic on his tongue. He'd bitten the inside of his lip. He sat up wincing. The snap came again, and involuntarily he glanced down at his hand. It was unmarked. He realized the sound was coming from outside the room. Someone knocking, albeit hesitantly, at the door. He rolled off the bed, shivering as his bare feet hit the cold floor. He'd fallen asleep in his clothes, and he looked down at his wrinkled shirt in distaste. He probably still smelled like wolf, and he ached all over. The knock came again. Jace strode across the room and threw the door open. He blinked in surprise.
Alec?
Alec, hands in his jeans pockets, shrugged self-consciously. Sorry it's so early. Mom sent me to get you. She wants to see you in the library.
What time is it?
5 a.m.
What the hell are you doing up?
I never went to bed. It looked like he was telling the truth. His blue eyes were surrounded by dark shadows. Jace ran a hand through his tousled hair.
All right, hang on a second while I change my shirt.
Heading to the wardrobe, he rummaged through neatly folded square stacks until he found a dark blue long-sleeve t-shirt. He peeled the shirt he was wearing off carefully. In some places, it was stuck to his skin with dried blood. Alec looked away. What happened to you? His voice was oddly constricted.
Picked a fight with a pack of werewolves.
Jay slid the blue shirt over his head. Dressed, he padded after Alec into the hallway.
You have something on your neck, he observed.
Alec's hand flew to his throat.
What? Looks like a bite mark, said Jace. What were you doing out all night anyway?
Nothing. Beet red, his hand still clamped to his neck, Alec started down the corridor. Jace followed him. I went walking in the park, tried to clear my head.
And ran into a vampire?
What? No, I fell.
On your neck?
Alec made a noise, and Jace decided the issue was clearly better dropped.
Fine, whatever. What did you need to clear your head about?
You? My parents? Alec said. They came and explained why they were so angry after you left, and they explained about Hodge. Thanks for not telling me that, by the way.
Sorry. It was Jace's turn to flush. I couldn't bring myself to do it somehow.
Well, it doesn't look good. Alec finally dropped his hand from his neck and turned to look accusingly at Jace.
It looks like you were hiding things. Things about Valentine.
Jace stopped in his tracks.
Do you think I was lying? About not knowing Valentine was my father?
No. Alec looked startled, either at the question or at Jace's vehemence in asking it. And I don't care who your father is. It doesn't matter to me. You're still the same person.
Whoever that is.
The words came out cold before he could stop them. I'm just saying. Alec's tone was placating. You can be a little harsh sometimes. Just think before you talk, that's all I'm asking. No one's your enemy here, Jace.